This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt Patrick here. Patrick, we're mailing it in for the rest of the week at this point. I mean, just it is what it is, man. It's Memorial Day weekend. Apparently, I was kind of surprised. The boss said we could, so we got a best of show tomorrow and a best of show on Monday for everyone out there, if there is such a thing with this show. I mean, seriously, let's be honest.
Yeah, the best of is kind of an oxymoron with us. Really. I am surprised that corporate did let us take the day off, the whole weekend off.
I believe he might be out fishing. So we should be careful. I'm off. We've got a full slate of the weekend shows, though, right? They're all ready to go, right?
Yep, we'll have best ofs for all of your favorite shows all weekend long. So keep it tuned to AM 950 while you're grilling out.
Yeah, those radio classes are paying off there, my friend. All right, so. If you haven't joined us already, this is pretty much the entire show. I get outraged every once in a while, but you know, that's pretty much it, you know. I hope everyone has a good Memorial Day out there. As a veteran, all my salutes to everyone out there, all the people who have served, people currently serving, and all the people that have lost a loved one, all my best as you celebrate, honor Memorial Day, and all my best out to everyone out there this weekend. Drive safe. I don't know how warm the water is going to be up north. I know the Grand Poobah around here did do some fishing up in Vermilion last week. I didn't ask him how warm the water was. It's got to be pretty cool yet still. It is remarkable how quickly the lakes up there warm up, though. I mean, it's, you know, by the end of June, it's going to be pretty nice. By mid-July, it's bath water. So if it's a shallower lake, if it's a deeper lake, good luck. Lake Superior never warms up. Do you have any fun plans for this weekend at all?
I will actually be at the Twins game on Friday and then again on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that.
You beat me, man. That's okay. First of all, between you and I, this town kicks butt, man. There's so many things to do here. Cool that you're heading on downtown and you're going to enjoy those Twins games.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Weather Friday night is looking absolutely spectacular. Should be in the probably about 70 by first pitch.
All right. Nice. There you go. I'm going to I got a birthday, not mine, family birthday coming up here this weekend. We're actually going to have a soiree. Ooh, ooh la la. And the most important thing, Patrick, don't you dare try to talk me out of this. I'm making strawberry rhubarb pie, my friend. Strawberry rhubarb pie. It is that time of year. Strawberries are in. Rhubarb is in. Go. Fight.
I will do absolutely nothing to dissuade you from that deliciousness.
Oh. All right. So I'm going to start. We got two lighter stories. Dr. Joe Eastman is going to join us, our COVID model expert, coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. Also, we're going to go out the reopening of Fort Snelling, Bedote. We're going to talk about that, reopening up the brand new Welcome Center out there, as well as also the job they're doing of making sure that all the history is remembered. We'll talk with them coming up here in the 5:30. We're open this hour, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, do you want... We got the sad celebrity news and we got the positive celebrity news. Which one do you want first?
Let's start with the sad and then we can kind of pick it up.
Ray Liotta passing away. The blue-eyed actor, best known for playing Henry Hill in Goodfellas, baseball player Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams, has died. He was 64. Liotta's publicist, Jen Allen, said he was in the Dominican Republic shooting a movie and didn't wake up on Thursday morning. An official of the Dominican Republic's National Forensic Sciences Institute, who was not authorized to speak in the media, confirmed the death and said the body was taken to Cristo Rodondo Morgue. De Niro, who co-starred with Liotta in Goodfellas, said in an email statement, "I was very saddened to learn of Ray's passing. He was way too young to have left us. May he rest in peace." Lorraine Bracco, who played Karen Hill in Goodfellas, just by the way, if you haven't seen that movie, holy God, is that a great film. They tweeted on the Thursday that she was utterly shattered to hear his terrible news about my Ray. "I can't be anywhere in the world and people will come up and tell me their favorite movie is Goodfellas. They always ask us, what was the best part of making that movie? My response has always been the same, Ray Liotta." The thing which is remarkable, because of course he did Field of Dreams And then Goodfellas, I think Field of Dreams was 1989. Goodfellas was 1990. He was as young as he looks in both of those films. He was in his 30s. Now, it worked a little bit better for Goodfellas because obviously he aged through the film. But he had such a young, youthful appearance, which was just remarkable. It is amazing. There are some people. I was watching the David Letterman interviews that he does on Netflix with Ryan Reynolds. And they showed Ryan Reynolds when he was two guys and a girl in a pizza place. Was that when he was on that show way back when? And Ryan Reynolds looks better today, a lot better today than he looked back then. And granted, I think that that's kind of the Hollywood diet, very clean, healthy living, lots of exercise, that sort of thing. But he looks a lot better than he did back then. Ray Liotta always looked about 20 years younger than he is. Even the pictures that they're putting out today, fantastic. You a big fan of Goodfellas or Field of Dreams? You're a big sports guy. You gotta love Field of Dreams.
Yeah, definitely sad and shocking to hear that one this morning.
No foul play expected. He just didn't wake up. I'm wondering if there was a medical issue that people were unaware of. That would be my guess. Because usually if it's he went to sleep, he never woke up, and it's an unknown, that would be obviously considered mysterious. But the fact is that they're not saying anything. In just saying it's not under investigation leads me to believe that it wasn't there was no foul play or anything like that expected. Must have been maybe a medical condition. And once again, fairly young. I believe he was 67 years old comparatively. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll give you here, Patrick, the positive entertainment news. The positive entertainment news. Jesse Diggins. Here comes Diggins. Jesse Diggins is one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, ever. And I've done radio interviews for years and years and years and years and years. One of my favorite interviews I ever did. It was heartbreaking to interview her because we interviewed her as her book was coming out. Right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I imagine, if I remember correctly, her publicist said, well, we can't mention a few of these things because they're being canceled left and right, and we don't quite know what's going to be available. And if you haven't read her book is very good, very enjoyable, a wonderful interview. We talked to her from Norway or Sweden. She was out training, and we talked to her out there. But I got some very positive news. Jesse Diggins, one of my favorite people ever, and a woman that makes me proud to be a damn American. God bless you. You're a fantastic skier. She's used to hearing cowbells cheering her final line in the cross-country skiing competitions. She's hearing wedding bells this weekend. Oh, the Minnesota native will be marrying her longtime boyfriend, Wade Poplawski. P-O-P-L-A-W-S-K-I. Poplawski? Poplawski. Poplawski. On a private farm in the Twin Cities area, Diggins, originally from Afton, who has won unprecedented cross-country skiing medals at the Olympics as well as the World Cup Championship. Diggins won a silver and a bronze in the 2022 Olympics in China, finishing in the top eight of all six events that she entered. In 2018, she teamed with Keegan Randall to win the team sprint in the Olympics in South Korea, the first Winter Games gold won by the U.S. in cross-country skiing ever. Poplawski, 35, originally from Winnipeg, Manitoba, where his family still lives. He attended Colgate University. Minty fresh breath. On a hockey scholarship, he skated for the Rapid City Rush for the last 10 years. He's worked in finance in Boston. Under Jesse's tutelage, I'm considering taking a shot at Canada's cross-country ski team for the 2026 Olympics in hopes Jesse and I become skiing's next power couple, he said in an email. All my best. Congratulations on that. And wonderful news. Jesse Diggins, you're still in. Oh, love you. Love you. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome on into the show.
Hey, man. It's been a while. Good to talk to you.
Indeed,
sir. You know, the founders, they're pretty elite themselves, you know. When they wrote the laws, they made it so just white men of property could vote, and I don't think we could be trusted, us the rabble, with the vote they felt. So I'd like to ask you to comment on this. Who's at fault for the mess we're in today? The big money elites, the Koch network, whatever, the millionaires, Republicans, and some Democrats. So who's ruining this country? The elites or the rabble who are manipulated to vote against their own interests? Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Big fan of Ray Liotta. big money controls this country. I said this yesterday with Stein. I mean, it's clear a handful of people, a few hundred people with a lot of money can buy off a political party, in this case, the Republicans, and dictate what rules and what laws get passed. They can dictate which judges get appointed. They can dictate who gets to the Supreme Court. And they can dictate whether or not you have a right to not have a gun jammed in your face 24/7, 365 under the argument of safety. So, no, it's you know, and you people say, well, we need to get money out of this. It's power. You're going to have to fix a lot of things. And until the voters rear up and go and stop this, they don't have any fear. The people that are in control of this country have zero fear that the voters will once again be outraged, because they know you're outraged today about Roe v. Wade, about gun violence, whatever the case may be, will wane by the time you get to September and you're like, oh my God, we got to vote again. Oh my God, I don't want to vote again. And then all of a sudden you're sitting here in December saying, what do you mean contraception's now illegal? And you know, once again, they're very good at making sure it never is too fast, that the quality of life that you lose is just slow drips that fall to the wayside. Oh, we're not going to give you as good of a healthcare plan. Oh, we're not going to be able to give you a raise this Christmas. Oh, okay. Even though we're going to blame Joe Biden, the reality is the only reason prices are going up is because we're charging a lot more. Because we can, because we want another vacation home and a 13th jet ski. And they slowly trickle it away so you don't even realize how bad your life has gotten. And they're just hoping. I mean, like I said, I right now in this country, there's a youth march that's going to happen against gun violence. And the feeling I have is this generation after the millennials, the Generation Z, they are tired of our crap. And they are like, why are things not getting done? When 90% of people are for common sense gun laws, how come 90% of the population cannot have their opinion agreed to that it's not even the 10%, it's the 7% with 3% undecided. The 7% opinion on this is the only one that matters. That's who runs the country. And until there's a reason why every time I come up and I talk about voting is that, you know, help your local campaign, sure, by all means. Door knock, make a phone call, make a donation, by all means. But unless you get everyone you know to the polls on election day, none of this matters. That cutesy little meme that you put up there on Twitter that you got 40 likes on, oh boy, look at me, I made a meme. I did something. No, you didn't. Really doing something. Stacey Abrams showed us the way. Get everyone registered. Get everyone to the polls. Because if you get everyone registered and everyone to the polls, states like, oh, Georgia, go blue. States like Arizona, go blue. Gerrymandered states like Wisconsin, go blue. That is the one thing that can beat them. Their entire system. The laws that they put into place to try to discriminate voting, the gerrymandered districts, the money advantage, the only thing that can knock them down is if everyone shows up and votes. If everyone shows up and votes, there's nothing they can do. Even in districts which are, when they go out there and they say, oh, they're like a plus three Republican district, that's banking on a bunch of Democrats not showing up to vote. And so if you get everyone out there voting, guess what? Things change. But that's the trick. That's it. That's it. That's everything. That is everything right now. Everything. Make sure five of your friends, all five of your friends that you know are registered to vote. Make sure on election day, or if you have early voting, that they do get to the voting, whether it's an early vote or whether that's on the day of. And if everyone out there makes your five friends get to the polls, the Democrats will absolutely wipe the floor with the Republicans. Absolutely. Absolutely. It won't even be close. because the Republicans cannot beat a turnout advantage. That is why a substantial amount of their annual election income is to discourage voting. Absolutely. Every year. Every year. They have to discourage voting. So, get everyone you know, make sure they're registered to vote, make sure they get to the polls. Ta-da! It's really that simple. And I guarantee you, Republicans will create something like Ebola or, oh, pay attention to Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Don't pay attention to anything else. They'll try. And I'm not saying you have to be so laser focused you can't see the world around you, but you say, hey, by the way, I'll get back to that in a second. I got to make sure I go vote. That is your priority. That's how you change things. I've always said this. I thought it was amazing when I realized this. I thought the prohibition movement was like 30, 40 years. No. In 1910, no one was talking about prohibition outside of a handful of what were considered to be lunatic, you know, politicians. It was a constitutional amendment by 1918. So within 8 years, an issue that was nowhere became a major issue because a lot of people got on board with it and people showed up for that issue. You can change things. Now, in the case of, you know, prohibition, that wasn't necessarily a good thing, but it was, that just shows you things can change. It just, you have to be focused. You have to get out and vote. And I guarantee you this, if this election and then the election in 2024 and the election in 2026 and the election in 2028, if the Democrats go on out there and they vote in every single one of those elections and they vote with force, you'll have a supermajority in the Senate. You'll be able to get gun violence dealt with, probably a constitutional amendment fixing the Second Amendment. You'll be able to get, you know, the Roe v. Wade put into federal law. You'll be able to get that. And I'm sure that the far right wing Supreme Court will try their hardest to stop that, but you'll have the votes to basically put whoever you want to on the Supreme Court. That's how you change things. But, you know, you can just sit at home, watch TV, and then sit there. It's like, what do you mean I have to have the baby? I couldn't get contraception to start. That's up to you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Reminder, what Republicans do, it's about control. It's not about the betterment of society. It's about controlling you. And that's not freedom. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's get into the latest news coming out of Texas when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You got on top and we both got off again. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to take some time here to talk about the latest developments in Uvalde, Texas. Law enforcement authorities faced questions and criticism Thursday on how much time elapsed between they stormed the Texas elementary school classroom and put a stop to a rampage by a gunman who killed 19 children and two teachers. Investigators were unable to say with any certainty whether an armed school district security officer outside Robb Elementary in the town of Uvalde exchanged fire with the attacker, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, when Ramos first arrived on Tuesday. The motive for the massacre, the nation's deadliest school shooting since Newtown, Connecticut, a decade ago, remained under investigation, with authorities saying Ramos had no criminal or mental health history. During the siege, which ended when the U.S. Border Patrol team burst in and shot the gunman to death, frustrated onlookers urged police officers to charge into the school, according to witnesses. Go in there, go in there, women shouted at the officers soon after the attack began. It said one Carranza, a 24 who watched the scene from outside the house across the street. Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw said Wednesday that 40 minutes to an hour elapsed from when Ramos opened fire on the school security officer to when the tactical team shot him. The bottom line is law enforcement was there. They did engage immediately. They did contain Ramos in the classroom. But the department spokesman said Thursday that authorities were still working to clarify the timeline of the attack, uncertain that period of 40 minutes to an hour began when the gunman reached the school or earlier when he shot at his grandmother at home. Right now, we do not have an accurate or confident timeline to provide to say the gunman was in the school for this period, said Lieutenant Christopher Olivares on CNN. Border Patrol Chief Raul Ortiz did not give a timeline, but said repeatedly that the tactical officers from his agency who arrived at the school did not hesitate. He said they moved quickly to enter the building, lining up in stack behind an agent opening holding up a shield. What we wanted to make sure is to act quickly, so act swiftly, and that's what those agents did. But law enforcement officials say that once in the building, the Border Patrol agents had trouble breaching the classroom door and had to get a staff member to open the room with a key. The official spoke on condition and anonymity because it was not authorized to talk publicly about the investigation. Olivares said the investigators are trying to establish whether the classroom was in fact locked or barricaded in some way. Javier Cazares, whose fourth-grade daughter, Jacqueline Cazares, was killed in the attack, said he raced to the school when he heard about the shooting arriving while police were gathered outside. Upset that police were not moving in, he raised the idea of charging into the school with several other bystanders. Let's rush in because the cops aren't doing anything like they're supposed to. More could have been done. They were unprepared, he added. Carranza had watched as Ramos crashed his truck into a ditch outside the school, grabbed his AR-15 assault weapon and shot two people outside of a funeral home who ran away uninjured. Olivares said CNN that the school security officer outside there was armed and that initial reports said that he and Ramos exchanged gunfire, but right now we're trying to corroborate that information. As Ramos entered the school, two Uvalde police officers exchanged fire with him and were wounded, according to Olivares. Ramos went into the classroom and began to kill. Carranza said the officers should have entered the school sooner. There were more of them. There was just one of him. On Wednesday night, hundreds packed the bleachers of the town's fairgrounds for a vigil. Some cried, some closed their eyes tight, mouthing silent prayers. Parents wiped their arms around it, wrapped their arms around their children as the speakers led prayers for healing. Before attacking the school, he shot and wounded his grandmother at a home they shared. Neighbor Gilbert Gallegos, 82, who lives across the street, and was known to the family for decades, said he was puttering in his yard when he heard the shots. Ramos ran out the front door and across the yard to a truck parked in front of the house and raced away. He spun out, I mean fast, spraying gravel in the air. Ramos's grandmother emerged covered in blood. She says, Berto, this is what he did. He shot me. She was hospitalized. Gallego said he had heard no arguments before or after the shots and knew of no history of bullying or abuse to Ramos, whom he rarely saw. Lorena August was a substitute teacher at Uvalde High School when she heard about the shooting and began frantically texting her niece, a fourth grader at Robb Elementary. Eventually, she found out the girl was okay, but that night the niece had a question. Why did they do this to this girl? Asked, why? We're good kids. We didn't do anything wrong. The problem is the guns. Now, I don't ever want to be in the position that these parents were in, where they are in horror wondering if their children are being killed. I would have to believe myself if I was in that situation, I would try to do something to save my children. But I think we need to step back and to understand this problem on why it's the guns and why we have to do something about the guns. We need to look at the perception of what people think police should be able to do when there is someone with an assault weapon in a fortified position versus what the police who... I can understand you might be saying, why are you guys being cowards? The reality is they know what they're dealing. They know what they're up against. That's why they wanted to wait for the tactical team to get in there. Let's talk about that when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, Dr. Joe Eastman, our COVID model expert, is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour, as well as Doug Graney. He's the director of Metro Area Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. Historic Fort Snelling is going to be reopening today over at Bedote, and we'll talk to him about that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So, one of the things that really bothered me, one of the many things that bothered me on 9/11 was this repeated narrative that you would hear from young kids going on who are saying, this is just like a movie. And I got really angry at that because, and I still am to this day, a little angry at it because for the most part, outside of rare occasions, people are not dying in the movie. So when they're making that movie, that's not dying. That actually was a lot of people dying very quickly and horribly as we were attacked. And so you shouldn't just sit there and say, I can't tell the difference between reality and television anymore. Because reality is reality. And to a point, I think this is something I've talked about numerous times, where you'll have some person who will go online and admit to a crime that they committed, thinking the online world is some sort of alternate Doctor Strange dimension, and that they, I just admitted to it online. I didn't admit it to it in the real world. And they're like, oh, really? Wow. Okay. Once again, I can't comprehend the panic, the terror, the fear of a parent who's outside of a school as a crazed gunman is gunning down kids inside, wondering what's going on. And I can completely understand a parent saying, if no one else is going to go in there, I got to go try to save my own kid. I can understand that. I can understand that. But for the people that were not in Uvalde, Texas, who were not there at that school, one of the things that you seem to think a police officer can do, and I'm going to, I mean, I understand people say, well, why aren't the officers going in there and I doing things? Don't get me wrong. We with the Amir Locke shooting, I think there's a lot of things police do wrong. And there is a bad habit in a long history of police officers shooting unarmed people and saying, I was scared, and basically walking away saying that there's nothing there. There's no crime that they've committed. They just can say, I'm scared, and that's it. But when you are a parent and you say, why aren't you just storming a fortified position that's occupied by a man with an assault weapon? There's a lot of things I don't think you seem to understand, okay? The police officers are not going to pull off a Matrix style, run up the oak tree and do a backflip as the bullets come whizzing past them, roll over to a garbage can, sneak over to the hedge, and then fly through the window and roll once and get up into a firing position on a guy who is wearing full body armor and basically take him out with one shot. Why didn't you just do that? Because it's an assault weapon. This is a weapon that has been made for military combat. So let's say you are in, I don't know, Vietnam, and you're going through the woods and the jungle, and you're walking through, and the enemy has set up a shooting bunker that is well disguised, and they're sitting there with their guns waiting for you to come by, because even though there might be some trees and brush, unless you can get down flat on the ground and you're in a little bit of a gully, there's nothing that's going to stop you from getting shot. You can get behind a rock, maybe, that's it. But you, if you're pinned down, if you're being shot at, if you've got someone who's occupying a fortified position, you can't just run at them and hope. Dear Lord, my God, have you... Look at the history of combat. How many times you've had people run out of ditches at an enemy line to be slaughtered? Civil War, World War I, World War II, Vietnam. It just doesn't work that way. You can't just dodge the bullets. And I understand you like to think to yourself, oh, well, the cop could get shot 5 or 6 times and still make it in there. No. I talked about this when we had the shooting by the guy who shot the 2 kids up in Little Falls. You get hit by a bullet, you more than likely are going to be in shock within a few seconds. It depends on how fast you're losing blood. But this idea that you're the bad guy in Die Hard who can be shot 8 times and then still be coming back like you're a freaking Terminator robot, that is not true. This is why the entire issue is guns. Assault weapons designed for military combat that are designed to kill other human beings as fast and as quickly as possible are really good at doing that. And that's why they should not be available on the market. They shouldn't. Because they are designed to kill other human beings as quickly and as fast as possible. It's true. It's true. And you can sit there and make an argument that, well, they should at least try. I'm not saying that if there's any way at all in there, by all means, go for it. But if you're looking at a crazed man with military-grade assault weapons designed to kill other human beings, and you're thinking that you're going to be able to jump past a tree, hop over one fence, and barrel roll through the window and somehow magically land and take a shot, that's the freaking movies! That's not the real world! And it sounds like in this case with these military, with these police officers, I mean, you would need a military basically. The when they got their militarized force there, they still had trouble getting into the room. It's not as you think. Remember when Charlie Hebdo, the magazine over in Europe, was attacked? There were a bunch of far-right gun loons that tried to prove that if Charlie Hebdo staff had guns, that they would have survived the attack. And so they built I don't know if you remember this, they built a similar layout to the Charlie Hebdo facility. They armed people and they tried to run the terrorist attack on the magazine with different results saying, see if you would have had guns. And they came on out sheepishly at the end and said the only person that survived was the guy that when he heard the bullets start to fly, he left through the back emergency door. Everyone else, even when they had cases where they had a guy sitting there, and this would not be a normal real world scenario, although Republicans like to imply this is. Even if he was sitting there with a loaded weapon, assault weapon, with the safety off and a finger on the trigger, they were still getting killed. That no matter what scenario they were running, it just did not work. Because, once again, assault weapons are designed to kill as many people as quickly as possible. If you think, don't get me wrong, I understand the compassion and caring of a father. I am a father. And I would, I knew my kid was in a school, and I probably would have the hard time not trying to run through it. But I would also know I'm probably making a suicide run to try to save my child. And that's just the reality of it. It's a psychopath with a military grade weapon in a fortified position wearing body armor. We forget that little part too. He was wearing body armor. Yeah, your classroom teacher is going to be able to take that guy down quick. Dear Lord, come on. Here's the other thing that you should take away from the police response to this. And that is the reality. This is the validation you need that these weapons need to be regulated. And that is, they knew exactly what they were up against, and they were outgunned. Think about that. I want you to think about it. A West Texas police department was outgunned by one guy with an assault weapon. That's how lethal these guns are. And you say to yourself, well, it was the individual. No, indeed, the individual was pulling the trigger, but there is no vehicle of death and carnage as efficient and as effective as an assault weapon. That's just it is. It's designed to do that. It's designed for military combat zones when you're taking on a platoon of guys trying to shoot you. That's what it's designed to do. And those police officers were outgunned by one guy with 210 rounds. They knew it. And it's time for all you clowns to wake up on this. All you guys that go out there and say, well, knives kill people. If it was, are we going to ban knives, Matt? Are we going, pipes kill people in 1940s TV shows? Are we going to ban pipes, Matt? Axes can kill someone. Are we going to ban axes? If they had a knife, a pipe, an axe, a crossbow, a sword, there might have been some death. There might have been a few people that died. But I guarantee you this, the officers would have stormed that room a heck of a lot faster. Because to kill with one of those things is something which you have to get up close and personal. The assault weapon, you can sit 20 feet away from someone, lock in a banana clip, pull, lock and load, pull the trigger and spray and kill 10 people without ever getting close to them. That's why assault weapons are so freaking deadly and why they should be regulated. But Matt, he could have had a hunting weapon. He could have had a personal defense pistol. Don't get me wrong. He could have definitely killed a few people with a personal defense pistol. But I guarantee you this, the police at least then have a fighting chance in that scenario of being able to storm that building. A hunting rifle? What, a shotgun that's got two rounds in the chamber? Don't get me wrong. Once again, people are going to get killed. But not nearly as much, and the police would have stormed that room a lot faster. What makes this killing and the Buffalo killing and every single other killing that's happened lethal is the assault weapons. We banned the assault weapons, and these slaughters declined dramatically. The Republicans removed the ban on assault weapons, and the slaughters jumped, three times as high, almost immediately. They are vicious machines. And yes, it requires an operator. But right now, Republicans aren't really going to spend any damn money on mental health issues or a database for that. They're not going to require background checks. No, the reason why there are this many dead kids is the weapon of choice was an assault weapon. The reason why the police did not storm that building is because it was like a combat zone. We have created the ability of an 18-year-old kid to basically arm himself like a military brigade from a foreign country with body armor and an assault weapon and be able to hold off a West Texas police department single-handedly because he's got one assault weapon. Don't you dare come back and tell me, it's not the guns. It's the guns. It's the guns. And there is nothing about this chaos in this country right now, which is a well-regulated militia. It's a bunch of freaking yahoos out there who think that more guns give them more, more stamina or testosterone. Makes them look like tough guys. Make you look like freaking loon balls. You're all freaking loon balls with all your guns. What's wrong with you people? Seriously, if I walked into someone's house and their entire wall of their house was axes, would you immediately like, nope, I'm out of here, bye? No, no, no. These are my. I collect axes. Look, this one is boy. This one's really sharp. No, no. Even if this guy is the biggest fan of Paul frickin' Bunyan of all time, no, I'm not going to stick around someone's house that's got a wall full of axes. Because you're a loon ball, for God's sakes. But yet, I've walked into people's houses and they're like, "Wow, that's 8 guns you've got on the wall there. 8 guns. Are you expecting a small contingent of Canadians to come rolling across the country here to try to take over your property? Is that what's going on?" It's for safety. Dude, you live out in the middle of freaking nowhere. No one cares where you are. No one's coming to attack you. This is just your impotence ringing forward. Let's just be honest about it. All you guys like to play fantasy like, "Oh, there's going to be the one day I'm going to be in the mall and the terrorists are going to try to take over. And I'm going to wipe the cheese sauce from the Wetzel pretzels off my fingers and grab my wet bang, done." Nope. And then your gun is being used by whoever is there shooting up the place to kill other people. You guys have all these fantasies, but all they are is fantasies. Nope. The real reality is this, is that the assault weapons need to be banned. We need to stop this chaos, and only the sickest, most twisted, broken human beings think more guns is the answer. Really, that's just the truth. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. And by the way, there is another little thing here that I think we need to address. Once again, this laughable nature of the liberal media. Media is not liberal. Dear Lord. So the Democrats in unison try to basically push for a debate on common sense gun regulations, and the Republicans stop it from happening. And what's the headline? Democrats fail. Democrats fail. No, the Democrats didn't fail anything. The Democrats voted in unison. The Democrats want to have the debate. The Democrats are trying to work this forward. But the media covers it as Democrats fail, as opposed to Republicans block common sense gun laws. That should be the headline. Every time you see that, just know that that is people running cover for the Republicans. Because there is no, the Democrats are not the ones failing there. They're the ones all voting in unison for common sense gun laws, which 90% of us want. The failure here is the Republicans. So you might as well just say, Republicans fail. Oh, but we don't, that's going to be hard to sell to our base if we, you got to put it as Democrats fail. Because they failed to convince any of us to have a heart and a soul. So is it really our fault? No, it's the Democrats. That's their argument. No, 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 no. If you see in media outlet that as we try to pass regulations that for common sense gun laws, that puts out the narrative, Democrats fail at passing law, I want you to call that newspaper and say, how exactly did the Democrats fail when it was the Republicans that voted against even having the discussion about it? Shouldn't the headline be Republicans refuse to even debate common sense gun laws? But Matt, if we write that, even though it's 100% factual, Republicans will blame us for being liberal media. Grow a freaking spine and do your damn job. Grow a freaking spine and do your damn job. Your job is not to make sure Republicans are not going out there and telling us we're bad. Republicans tell you you're bad because you report the truth, and the truth makes them look horrible. Republicans blocked any discussion about common sense gun laws. That's not the Democrats. That's the Republicans. You can call them out. you know, pull them over the coals. Let, you know, make them sweat. I mean, they had the Sky News person go up to Ted Cruz today, and Cruz was so incensed. The Republicans are so used to controlling what is said on media in this country that when a woman from Britain asked him a question, he basically ran away in freaking terror because he doesn't have an answer. The problem here is the Democrats are not willing to come together with us and basically do nothing. When the Democrats are willing to do nothing about this, then we'll have compromise. That's their narrative. So, once again, if you are out there and you read a news outlet that says Democrats fail when Democrats are in unison trying to get there, and what's really happened is the filibuster has stopped any kind of common sense, just even discussion. People can still vote against the bill. They don't even want to have a discussion about common sense gun laws. Make sure you call that out correctly. Republicans refuse to allow even a discussion on common sense gun laws. Because if the media actually reported what, once again, is 1,000% factually accurate, Republicans refuse to even allow a debate on common sense gun laws. If you actually reported that, well, maybe public opinion would drive the Republicans to go out there and say, maybe we should be doing what the 90% of the people want, as opposed to what the big corporate gun manufacturers and bullet manufacturers are telling us to do, as well as the gun kooks who basically feel as if more guns gives them more manhood. Guys are all, I mean, you're all broken. You're all broken people. Founding fathers would not be on board with this. Jesus would not be on board with this. You're all crazed loon balls. If you want to go play with military-grade weaponry, join the Army. And trust me, when you come back, you'll have a much bigger appreciation for how freaking dangerous those things are, as opposed to sitting in your basement using a 20-round clip to try to shoot a few beer bottles off your back porch and accidentally shooting one of your kids. Yeah, might be good for you to do that. Hour two of the show is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, once again on your Thursday. And a reminder, we have got, once again, best of shows coming in tomorrow, best of show on Monday. We will be back on the 31st of May on the Tuesday for a brand new live show right here as we head on into June. Following the next day, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We've got coming up a little bit later on, Doug Rainey is the director of the Metro Area Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. He's going to join us. They're reopening up Fort Snelling. We'll talk about the things that have changed. They moved that entire welcome center, which I'm very interested in how they managed to get all that done. And they're doing something which I'm glad they're doing. They went into some of the old barracks there, and they've revitalized them, made them the new Welcome Center. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes here. Dr. Joe Eastman's going to join us. He's our COVID model expert. But let me get the Minnesota coronavirus update into the record here first. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,170 newly reported cases, 9 reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,619. Among the newly reported deaths is a person aged 15 to 19 from Hennepin County. It marks the 6th COVID death in Minnesota for a person aged 15 to 19, the 10th person 19 or younger to die of COVID in the state of Minnesota. As much as Republicans like to say, well, it's not that big of a deal. Well, that's still 10 dead kids. 10 people who are dead that are 19 and younger. Oh, gosh. Can you imagine what would have happened if people had been concerned as opposed to just selfish in this country? Wow. Today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. According to the latest Metropolitan Council wastewater data, 32.4% of the samples in its coverage are BA2, while BA2121 has increased to 56% of all samples as of May 16th. So in total, the BA2 family has 88% of all samples. The Met Council covers about two-thirds of the metro area, so it's a pretty good gauge. Through May 25th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 416. Of those hospitalized, 31 people in intensive care and 363 people in non-ICU care. As of May 25th, the state reported that 3,915,459 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,710,575 people have completed their vaccine series. There is 2,448,661 people up to date with their shots, including boosters. Total number of reported cases in the state of Minnesota, 1,502,719. And once again, that number is grossly undercounted because there's a lot of people that get tested at home that they're just not calling in. It's not, yeah, it's just, ugh. That is a grossly underreported number. Kind enough to join us right now is Dr. Joe Eastman. He has, of course, worked with NASA. He's worked with Colorado State University, the LTER. He's currently part of the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team. He's up on the range. He's kind enough today to join us and talk a little bit about his current numbers and what he is seeing out there. Dr. Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. We have him there? Dr. Joe, you there? All right. Well, we're working through this. We'll get him on the air here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Let's see if we can pull him up here, because obviously he's very smart and he's very good with these numbers. And by the way, he's been begging me for strawberry rhubarb pie. He's been begging me to get some of my strawberry rhubarb pie. Are you there now, Dr. Joe? No. All right. Tell you what, why don't we try to call him on the landline? All right. Let's try to call him on the landline and we'll see if we can get him on the air that way. Because, yeah, sometimes we have technical issues. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One of the things I definitely want to talk with him about is in regards to the, there was a study that was out. I mean, long COVID is something that is obviously a big concern there, and we want to make sure that we are when you're dealing with long COVID, that you're basically making sure that it's you take it seriously, because not only can it be around for years, but as well there's also some theories and some thoughts that it basically is going to, it's affecting your brain. Well, now they're saying for everyone that's had COVID, 1 in 5 people under the age of 65 is going to have long COVID, and then the other side of it is 1 out of every 4. We have him?
Yep, Dr. Joe should be with us now.
Are you there, Dr. Joe?
I think I am.
Are you? it's, were you talking to someone that wasn't me?
Yeah, dead air. We've triumphed over technology again.
Oh, this show is a daily fight on that level, and most of the times we lose. All right, so Dr. Joe. Let's go to the story that you sent me yesterday. I was just touching about this, that of the people that get COVID under the age of 65, 1 out of every 5 people that had COVID is going to actually experience long COVID, and out of 65 and older, 1 out of every 4. Is that legit? Is that the numbers they're seeing now?
Yeah, that is correct. And the other thing is, you get to factor that in when we, everybody's always worried about the economy and the dollars now, right now. Well, you look at this down the road, it's going to cost us a heck of a lot more because of the long-term effects of COVID that is going on and all the different organs they're finding it affects.
It really is. And that's one of the things which is truly amazing about COVID, is the way it affects every individual almost seems to be unique to that individual.
It really is. I mean, we're all made up just slightly differently in how we react to this. We have different vulnerabilities and such. It's non-linearity at its best right now, I would say.
Is there anything else to your knowledge that's like that, where, like one person will have a mild headache, another person will have, diarrhea and GI tract issues, another person will have constant brain fog and tired. Is there any other disease that you know of that the symptoms are that varied on patient to patient?
Not really. In general, like for instance, the influenza. There's a new virus type. What do they call it? Adenovirus type 41, I think it's called. And that's triggering, they think, the severe hepatitis outbreak in children right now. So, I mean, the age group and the demographics, we all react differently to what this bugger is going to do to us.
We talk about long COVID. I mean, one of the things, can I ask a legit question? Has there been a person who had long COVID that's actually recovered, or is pretty much everyone who's had long COVID still experiencing COVID symptoms?
Yes, I can't think of a case right off the top of my head where it's resolved itself yet. There probably is, but, I'm not. I don't follow it that closely. Where I look at the trajectory of the long term COVID people, so I can't say for sure. But in general, nobody, over 90% have not shown any recovery from the effects of long term COVID.
Wow, that's terrifying. And it's what's terrifying is that it's. You know, as you said, it's not just the financial element of this. It's the fact that you have people who the mental health that goes along with this to be tired and sick for years. I mean, it almost sounds something medieval, going on where when we didn't have medicine anywhere, that just people were sick and that was just what that was your life and that was your existence. It almost feels like we're taking steps backwards.
Yeah, and modern medicine is trying to catch up with this thing, and we're finding new ways to probe things. There's new CT scans of the lungs that use artificial intelligence to see how the long-term COVID is spreading there. There's just so many different factors going on right at once, that our resources are unfortunately not. I alluded to this previously on your show. Our funding for scientific research right now is we can't get it through. What we need to properly address what's going on. And then as we kind of peel back the layers of mitigation strategies that we have put in place for the last 2.5 years, we're seeing some really strange things going on, like flu hospitalizations have been skyrocketing just in the last few weeks. And for God's sakes, this is May. This shouldn't be happening right now. But it's because we've sat there in kind of our little shelters, most of us, and you're not out there in the general public getting immunity to different things. Now you get the monkeypox all of a sudden emerging, and there's signs there's community spread of that in the United States. They thought it was just confined to male on male sex, but no, that's not the case, and. It's frightening. I think we're at the very tip of the iceberg right now. I think we're going to find a lot more.
Do you think part of the flu thing that you're mentioning is that part of the fact that, and one of the things that they talked about is the flu season from 20 to 21 was hardly at all because everyone was wearing a mask and it was down. Do you feel as if when we went through Omicron last 21 to 22, do you feel as if what's happening is, people are taking off their masks and all of a sudden the flu virus, which usually at that point is wounding down and it's not really a big deal, is all of a sudden, hey, here's a whole bunch of people that are not wearing masks. I can go back on the road again. Do you think that that's what's going on?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. That has a large effect. I mean, as a society, I don't know. I think we should be more like you know, the people of Asia that just accept wearing masks as part of their daily life.
Well,
you know, it's hard to imagine that, isn't it?
Well, it's just the idea. I mean, what you've got now is it's been so politicized, and it's like I always love when someone says, hey, you guys on the left have to be nicer to these people because they're idiots. And you're like, okay, what? No, I don't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and give the person that is willing to thumb their nose at a hundred plus years of medical science that says masks actually help us stay healthier because they heard something on Hannity and act like that's a viable counterpoint. I think that's unfortunately where we're at, is that we can go out there and say, hey, you know what? This is good for us. You probably need to be wearing a mask. And people are like, I don't care. I'm not going to. And you're like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you know, you think about it. I kind of think of an analogy, like during World War II, if we would have said, I'm sick of this rationing and, you know, pulling up the bootstraps or whatever they like to say. I quit. I give up. The war's over.
Really? I don't think we can say that really then. But that's exactly right. I mean, you could say, it'd be as if like, well, you know, Hitler's a myth, and you know, and so, you know, I don't have to ration anymore because that's just big government telling me all these guys are at war. I know the truth. That's just they're using tracking chips in the vouchers. That's kind of where we're at, isn't it?
It really is, and you know. I got to mention a very interesting study from one of my colleagues at the University of Texas modeling team. She just got an article published, and well, it shouldn't be surprising to us, but the biggest predictor of people that are not going to follow public health mitigation strategies and such is political affiliation.
Well, and you bring that up. Let's bring up the story that was, I think it was last weekend, the New York Times. Basically, they did a full research with a public broadcasting, and they basically said that if you are in a Republican district, twice as many people died of COVID in your district than in a strong Democratic district. It is that linear. It's just that the Republicans basically told their own voters to die to own the libs, and they did.
Oh, that's right. I mean, you can't deny the numbers, but sometimes, well, these people do. They deny numbers. You can present all the facts you want. They just don't listen. It's like, what do you do? I really don't know at this point.
You can only plead so much to try to save people's lives. That's the thing. Dr. Joe Eastman is joining us. He's our COVID model expert. So let's talk a little bit about where we're at right now. BA2 seems to be on the downward slide. BA2121 is, you know, it's kind of plateauing right now. Where are those at, and how are things looking for 4 and 5 right now? BA4, BA5.
Right now, BA4 and 5 are starting to pick up in Europe, which, you know, is a precursor to what's going to happen here in this country. It's very preliminary. Ireland's starting to really experience it. That's the most prevalent area that is seeing that. And if I don't know if you remember, but it was over close to 2 months ago, I said BA2 is going to overtake BA2 by this time of year, and sure enough, it has.
Oh no! The reason I keep having you on, Dr. Joe, is you are, and I say this affectionately, depressingly correct, because your numbers. Every time you've said anything, it's been absolutely proven to be true.
And thank you very much. I wish it weren't the case, but I'm starting to look at a possibility of the end of August for BA4 and 5 to start emerging in this country. I'll send you out some forecasts here later today. I'm in the middle of a model transition right now that is kind of eating me up at the moment. Still trying to get my forecast out for local county health officials up here. So, but yeah, I'm looking at 4 and 5 starting to pop up more frequently around that time frame. So, and the other thing that's going on is because of the playing field and, you know, the level of vaccination and such in this country, we're starting to notice that instead of having just a real sharp peak, like we used to see before when these waves would come, these waves are now starting to appear to spread out more and take longer to wane. And if you take that over time, the total integrated number of deaths and long-term COVID and such, the outcomes are you know, reaching pretty high numbers that you don't see because it doesn't jump out at you on the page in terms of a spike. Mm-hmm. It's more of a general wave that comes through. So that's kind of where we're sitting right now.
So we're going to be looking, I mean, I think it's pretty much convinced we're going to have a third or fourth booster shot. They're probably going to be coming down the line at some point, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And then there's the other factor of people that are immunosuppressed and cancer patients. They're finding the vaccines and people like myself the effectiveness is dropping a lot quicker than what they expected versus a completely healthy person. So that's another risk that, you know, I tell people, get your mask on, please. There's a lot of us out here that need all the protection we can get.
one last question for you today, Dr. Joe. Is there any other new emerging variants that are raising an eyebrow for you coming out of any part of the country, any part of the world?
Yeah, there is one. I can't think of it. It's another Omicron variant that is starting to pop up in the African continent and also in Malaysia. And I can't remember the variant label for it, but it's a variant of interest at the current time. And BA4 and 5 now in South Africa are getting up there in high numbers too. Mm-hmm. So expect this stuff to come down the pipeline. I mean, we're all connected, so it's stopping it.
It's what's amazing is that it used to take decades for viruses to travel around the world. Now it's done in a week, and it really is not much we can do to stop it concerning the way that we live today.
That's correct, and all the more reason for us to mask and socially distance. And I gotta stress, it's got to be more than 6 feet. The 6 feet thing is, there's a reason they call it 6 feet under.
Wow. Because, all right, so social distance, get vaccinated, wear a mask. Dr. Joe, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. No, I am not going to bring you a piece of a strawberry rhubarb pie. You'll have to make your own. But if it's too wet, if you're making the pie and it's too soupy, put a little more flour in there and mix it in, okay? That should take care of things, right?
Thank you. It's got to be done. It's my favorite pie in the world.
Mine too. My absolute yeah. favorite. This time of year, I have to have one. Dr. Joe Eastman, once again, if you want to follow him, Jelly Roll Blues on Twitter, you'll find all of his information. He puts it out there, and there's a lot of it, and he is genius, and I'm lucky to be able to chat with him. Dr. Joe, thank you very much. We'll chat with you soon, okay?
Yeah, and you have a great Memorial Day weekend.
You too, sir. Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, I love Dr. Joe, but his numbers, his science, it's real world data, and it's I you know, once again, he's saying that these spikes are probably not going to come in like they have been coming in, but it's more kind of a rolling spike. But then when you factor in that long COVID stuff, all right, I know everyone's exhausted, but if you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated. If you haven't gotten that second shot, get the second shot. If you haven't started getting your boosters, you're entitled to everyone can get their third booster, I think, at this point. Get that done. If you are eligible for the fourth booster, get that done. And then when they say, hey, we have another booster, don't just sit there and say, oh, I'm done. No, go get vaccinated. I do not want, and for God's sakes, I do not want in 10 years, and God, it's starting to feel like it's going to be there. I do not want in 10 years us to be having a conversation where people have just never gotten better. They've been sick the entire time. I don't want to get sick. So get vaccinated. Wear a mask. My God. I mean, that as these variants are, these other variants are coming through, the amount of people you see that just don't wear a mask anymore at all is really disturbing. And then socially distance. And as Dr. Joe said, yeah, they say 6 feet, but if you can make it further, make it further. Now I'm gonna have a little soiree on Friday, on Monday. I might have to have, you know, we can set the chairs up there, but we can be, you know, 5-10 feet away from each other. We're just on the back porch having fun. Sausage and peppers, man. Sausage and peppers. Solid. But that's what we're gonna do. And so, you know, just, you know, you can do it, just try, okay? And for everyone's health and everyone's betterment, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we do return, Doug Rainey, he's the director of Metro Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. Fort Snelling reopening this weekend after a lot of changes. We'll talk to him about all of them and all the history over there as well at Bedote. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Doug Rainey is kind enough to join us. He's the director of Metro Area Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. Historic Fort Snelling, after a fairly large renovation, is reopening to the public. And we're going to talk about the new attractions there, the new changes they've made, and also the embracing of all the history of that area. Doug, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Hi, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's start here because, I mean, I've always been a fan of history. I've always been a fan. I've gone to historic Fort Snelling many times. I've gone to take my family out there. I love it. And by the way, this is my get a membership to the Minnesota Historical Society because not only does it get you into this, but gets you into all their sites, and it is so well worth it. But that being said, go ahead.
Well, no, thank you very much. We really appreciate that. We appreciate everybody, including you coming out to all of our sites and sticking with us through these very difficult times.
Well, let's say if we could talk a little bit about that first before we get to Fort Snelling there. When you look at this, I mean, how have you guys weathered this? I mean, it's always been tough. I mean, there's not a museum I know that didn't have a hard time in the last 2 years. How did the Minnesota Historical Society, how did it go for them?
Well, really well. We've got great staff, and we've worked so hard on, you know, keeping our sites viable, up and running, and working through these very trying times to make sure that we're ready to go. We're starting to see visitors, return to our sites, and we're just so excited to be welcoming them back.
This project that has been overtaken over at Historic Fort Snelling is pretty monumental. Let's start with the Welcome Center, the old one, which kind of was underground. You took that out. Is it completely gone now?
Yes, as we affectionately call it, the underground bunker.
Okay.
In that particular case, it was built in the 1980s, and one of the first parts of the revitalization project was to remove that visitor center, and so now where that visitor center was is now a wonderful sprawling prairie that sits on top of what was once there, and that leads us right directly from the plaza, down to the 1904 Calvary Barracks buildings, Building 18 and Building 17. As they were once known as, which is now Building 18, which is now our new Plank Museum and Visitor Center.
That is, first of all, I'm very glad you saved those buildings. I'm a veteran, these historic sites, and there are a few more buildings over there I'm kind of hoping get renovated, because I think it's important to save this. But one of the things I got to, those buildings, if you've ever been to Historic Fort Snelling, you know the buildings he's talking about. They're the ones when you went from the old Welcome Center down towards the fort, they were there. I thought that those were... Well, I mean, there was a lot of people that were saying those were never going to get renovated because of two things, which were common construction, chemicals back then, asbestos and lead paint, that a lot of these places, they're overwhelmed with toxic chemicals. You guys took the challenge and you went in there and renovated those buildings.
Absolutely. And, you know, the gallery buildings have such a wonderful history to them. You know, I mean, they were built in 1904 and 1905, and, you know, at that time, they were state-of-the-art barracks when they opened, and cavalry and infantry troops lived there through about 1946, through the end of World War II, and then, of course, the VA opened an outpatient clinic in Building 18, which is now the Visitor Center, and that was operated until 1998, so... I mean, they've had a wonderful history on the site. And so, you know, when I first started about 5 years ago, I walked by those buildings many times and I thought to myself, oh boy, we need to really get these buildings done. We need to renovate them. And, you know, what we've really come up with is just a remarkable museum and visitor center. It is absolutely gorgeous inside. I can't wait for visitors to come out and see it. You know, we have space for meetings. We have lobby space. We have a classroom. The event space, which is up on the second floor, which will seat about 250 people for like a presentation, is actually the area where the troops would sleep in bunks four high. And it is just a remarkable space. And, you know, we now have also the Huss Gallery, which is we're working on the permanent exhibits that will go in there early in 2023. We have a wonderful Explore store, and we also have Grab and Go, something that the fort has never had. So you'll be able to come out there, grab something to eat and drink when you come out to visit.
That is actually pretty nice, because it has been one of those. It's because of the way it's built with the Mendota Bridge when they came through there. It is kind of off by itself, and so it's having some of those amenities is nice. The last time I was out there, they were working on the fort itself. Now we'll talk more about the history that you guys have now are embracing there. But let's talk some on the fort itself. What are some of the things that were actually done there over the last few years?
Yeah, so as part of the project, we redid an interpretive plan that talks about that all-inclusive history that you're talking about. So that was part of the overall project. We've also done some work on some of the structures within the fort proper. We've done some signage work both inside and out. We're as part of another project, we're working on history under the floorboards, if you're familiar with that particular exhibit. And
yes,
that's something we're working really hard on and looking forward to opening that up here in the end of the summer, first part of the fall. We have a new hospital banners exhibit also in the fort. So lots of change, not only across the landscape and with building 18, but also with parking and trails, and also the fort itself, the fort proper.
One of the big things, though, is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is this is going to be open year-round now? Because traditionally, the fort's only been open from Memorial Day to Labor Day, correct?
Yeah, that's probably one of the things that I'm most excited about. You know, we being involved with the fort and working out there year-round, we get to experience the fort when many of our visitors can't. And I am so excited about being able to have visitors explore the site, explore the brand new visitor center. You know, we have plans to bring some activities up from the fort during the winter and develop new activities. It's going to be open year-round. We're just really super excited about that.
And once again, Doug Rainey is joining us. He's the director of Metro Area Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. Fort Snelling at Bedote is reopening up this weekend, and we'll talk more about some of the events here. But let's talk about the history, because one of the things this is tough history. And this is, you know, but it's at the same time we've talked about Fort Snelling numerous times on my show. I think the importance there is you cannot learn unless you are willing to learn all the history. And there has been an effort there at the fort and within the Minnesota Historical Society to embrace what is really one of the worst elements of history that ever happened here, which was the concentration camp for the 1600 Dakota following the U.S.-Dakota War in 1862. This is truly a tragic thing that happened right here in that area there. Talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked in the past about how the fort embraced the Dred Scott history and started talking more about that, which I thought was a fantastic, you know, element of the story of the fort. But talk about this, because, I mean, there's a lot of reckoning that has to be made and a lot of understanding that has to happen in regards to what happened to the Dakota at Fort Snelling.
Yeah, I think what fascinates me about historic Fort Snelling is that it's just a home to a wide variety of history that is Minnesota. And that history includes Native peoples, trade, soldiers and veterans, enslaved people, immigrants, and how all of that interacts with the changing environment and landscape. And I think that, you know, many of these stories intersect and cross and are connected. They're complex. And in that particular case, I think, you know, the fort is and the surrounding area is a place of tragedy, and but it's also a place of celebration, and it's trying to find that balance and tell those different stories. You know, one of the things that we've really settled on and kind of I want to say our calling card is that the fort is a place of many voices, many stories, but one place. And what is important to us is to tell those different stories and to tell how they intersect and are connected and affect each other and, of course, affect the history of Minnesota.
You know, another part of history that I think was very well done, and this is the last few years that the forts brought this in, that Military Intelligence Service Language School with the Japanese Americans, because as the Japanese Americans were being vilified during World War II, they provided Japanese Americans provided a great service to America at that time. And you've talked about this. So there is it is a diverse and complicated history, and but I think that's the best part about history is it's not just one moment in time. You have to look at the entire history from, you know, thousands of years ago up to modern day time, because there's always great stories that can be told and great history that needs to be remembered. And I think that's the important part.
Yeah, I think the Military Intelligence Service Language School is a great example of exactly what we were talking about. Is, you know, many of those individuals came from internment camps across the West Coast and were shuttled and had opportunities to come to these camps, and one of the largest was, of course, at historic Fort Snelling. And in that particular case, over 6,000 of Nisei, the second generation Japanese Americans were trained there, lived there. Many of them lived in Building 17 and 18 and spent their time there. So, I mean, how appropriate is that? That's where we're at. And in that particular case, you know, they were such an important part. They were trained as interrogators, interpreters, you know, you talk to many people and you read many information about them, and they were such an important part to bringing World War II to a close. They, you know, they've been said to have saved you know, hundreds of thousands of lives and ended the war earlier because of their efforts. And so, how wonderful of a story is that for us to be able to tell? And it's right here in Minnesota.
There is also a lot of the history of the U.S. military presence there as well. Was Zachary Taylor, the former president, was he the only president that was there at one point?
I think so, but that would be actually a great question to ask the fort staff. That I believe he is, but But you know what? I'm going to have to check on that, Matt, and make sure. But I believe that he was. Yes.
Not a great president, and his love of fruit and milk was his downfall. But gave us the great Millard Fillmore experiment, which we can go past. There is a lot of history, and like you mentioned earlier, talking about the history. And if you go back, I mean, you don't have to go back too many years with the Historical Society, how they've basically rebuilt the fort and brought it back as it was almost completely wiped out at one point. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they were even thinking of completely demolishing to build, at that point, the Mendota Bridge, which they ended up saving the site.
Yeah, in 1956, the Highway 55 was actually scheduled to go through much of the fort, what was left at that particular point. And, of course, there was a groundswell, and people saved it. And, in 1960, the fort became the first Minnesota National Historic Landmark. And 5 years later, 1965, the Minnesota Historical Society took over and started the actual restoration process. So we've been working on it for a little while.
The one other last thing here, talking about the renovation, is you talked about prairie plants there, and I know this. It sounds like that's a big thing now. You're embracing the native plants of the land and trying to bring those back as much as possible. Correct?
Yes, very much so. One of the things, being a biologist by trade, that I'm really excited about is the prairie that we have. We have the new prairie that sits over what was the old building, the underground bunker, but we do have, we've been working very hard over the last couple of years also on the natural area around the fort itself. And so we've been working on ridding that area of invasives and doing some to work to reestablish, if you want to say, that particular prairie. We just got a round of plantings and seeds that will go into that particular area. And so the idea is in the next 3 to 5 to 10 years is those two prairies, those two natural areas, are going to be brought back together. And in that short, very short period of time, they are going to be seamless, and you'll never know the difference that one is from the 1970s and 80s, and the other one is basically about 2 or 3 or 4 years old.
The fort itself, it opens on Saturday for the grand reopening, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. We open on Saturday, May 28th, and we're open for Memorial Day weekend, which is that Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 10 to 5. And then we've got a number of different activities that are going on. One of the things that we're really excited about is that, when we started talking about reopening and getting the and kind of kicking this off, we thought, one event is just not enough. And so we are super duper excited because we have a number of events that are going to be taking part or taking place, I should say, starting off with the Memorial Day weekend. But we've got a number of really, really great events, music, speakers, lectures, book signings, family days, all kinds of other things that are running basically through the end of this calendar year. And we've got a lot of that information is up on our website right now through the end of the summer. And so we're really excited. I don't know if you're familiar with Bands on the Boulevard that we do at the Minnesota History Center, mm-hmm. but we've got Bands on the Bluff at the fort, not to be outdone. And so we've got a lot of really, really great stuff that's going to be happening here in the next few months.
Well, I'm fascinated. Is this going to be this weekend? The 1890s mechanized infantry bicycles. You're bringing those out? Really?
Yes.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, they really, really are. And, on Saturday and Sunday, it really is an opportunity for our guests to come and see the fort and see all the new things that are there at the fort. And then on Monday is more of our Memorial Day presentation. So we've got throughout the day, we've got demonstrations, a demonstration of a baseball game, old time baseball game, cooking demonstrations, and all other kinds of different activities and games and family fun.
If you haven't been, obviously the new Welcome Center will be, I think it's going to be fantastic. What time does it open on Saturday and Sunday?
We open at 10 o'clock and we are going through 5 p.m. On all three of those days. If you want further information, just don't hesitate to go to our website at www.mnhs.org /Fort Snelling.
And by the way, once again, that's Monday as well, so go over there. And if I can make the plea, go to Minnesota Historical Society's website, get the membership, get it. It will, trust me, as a parent of three, it is a sensational membership. It gets you into all the sites and a lot of cool sites around the metro area, as well as, of course, Splitlock Lighthouse and other ones across the state. Go to the MinnesotaMNHS.org. Get the membership. You'll really enjoy that. Doug, congratulations on getting that fixed. Congratulations on saving those two buildings as well. That is fantastic. And that is it's one of the reasons why I love the Historical Society. They're out there saving that history, which a lot of people probably wanted to bulldoze and knock them down and build something else there. But you guys saved them, and I'm glad you brought them back, and you're using them as the new Welcome Center.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words, Matt, and thank you for having me on today. And have a great evening.
Thank you very much. Doug Rainey, the director of Metro Sites for the Minnesota Historical Society. We'll take a break, wrap up the show when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Native Roots Radio coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour, and it's an absolute privilege to be the lead-in for that show. They're just fantastic there. We got Robert Pilot, Wendy, and the crew getting ready to give you Native American news and issues that you will not hear anywhere else right here on AM 950 and across the country, too. Nice. I'm glad. That's a great show. Make sure you're listening in the 6 o'clock hour. Stay with us all evening long right here. Rick Smith, have you not caught Rick Smith's show? Phenomenal. It's on later on. Is that 8 to 10 tonight? Yeah, there you go. Go check that out. It shouldn't be really quick here, but because of the other things we talked about today, I did want to mention, fueled by a palatable mix of shared grief, optimism, and frustration, hundreds gathered Wednesday at George Floyd Square on the site of Floyd's death outside a Cup Foods market in Chicago in 38th. They came to mourn and demand greater police accountability or to show solidarity with residents who have railed to keep the square an arts-driven memorial to Floyd, who was 46 and unemployed as a result of the pandemic when he was killed on May 25th. So many people killed by police officers. So many people here have come to the same conclusion. It could be me, my brother, my cousin, as opposed to he's just another guy. Let me go on with my life, said Paul Johnson, a psychotherapist who raised his children in the neighborhood and recently became involved in the communities United Against Police Brutality. Johnson added, his life, we will not allow it to be in vain. We can somehow turn these streets into a safer streets from the police, and it would be wonderful. Also covering in this ceremony for Minneapolis, the 2-year anniversary of George Floyd's death unveiled a new sign to mark the spot where he was killed by Minneapolis police officers. The new sign at the corner of 38th and Chicago now reads George Perry Floyd Square. Members of George Floyd family were on hand as a sign as the covering was pulled off the sign on Wednesday evening. Wednesday evening, about 36 people gathered in front of the governor's residence in St. Paul to remember Floyd and others killed by law enforcement, including Amir Locke and Jamar Clark. People held signs and artwork that led the call for response chants like Black Lives Matter and Say His Name. Speakers demanded police reform and systemic change. Back at George Floyd Square, the sign dedicated did not start smoothly. George's family members met with Frey and City Council President Andrea Jenkins as they proceeded to cite some of the crowd being called Go Home Frey. Fry, when the dedication was underway, Fry declined his opportunity to stand in the front row alongside Floyd's family members. He had released a prepared statement early in the day saying the city will continue to utter Floyd's name and remember his life and legacy. You know what would do a good thing there, Mayor Fry? Fixing that police department. Fixing it. Please. Please do. It's 2 years. We have way too long. I will say this to all the beautiful people in this city, to all this city itself, I love you. I'm very glad we're all here together because this city kicks ass and it will continue to kick ass. But we still have a lot of problems we have to fix and we cannot ignore them, not any longer. Native Roots up next. Have a good one. We are back on Tuesday. Until then, see ya.